Meeting God in Friend and Stranger is the title of a new teaching document on interfaith dialogue issued on Friday by the bishops of England and Wales. The 50-page text reminds Catholics they are called by baptism to engage in dialogue with people of other religions and encourages them to share experiences of prayer and worship in other faith traditions. Above all, the document stresses that dialogue is not restricted to academic discussions, but takes place where everyday life is shared by people of different faiths in a spirit of respect and openness.
We want to be open to other religions, but we would look to that to a degree of reciprocation of that in our interreligious dialogue partners.
Retired Archbishop of Southwark Kevin MacDonald leads the Bishops' Conference on Issues of Dialogue and Interreligious Relations. He told me more about this new document.
I think it's aimed in the first instance at the Catholic community. I think it's aimed in a particular way at those who are already involved in working with people of other religions in interreligious dialogue, and it seeks to give guidance and encouragement to them, and to those who are perhaps less aware of it in the Catholic community, to put forward once again the importance of interreligious dialogue as an integral part of the outreach of the Church in the post-conciliar era, as has been very evident, of course, in the ministry of Pope John Paul II and in the ministry of the present Pope. But having said that, I think it's also important that this document be heard and read outside the Catholic community. I think it's important that members of other religions understand the basis and the background for our desire to reach out in dialogue. And further than that, I would say that there are, for those who are not religious, and particularly for those who are against religion, it does give, I think, a picture, a vision of a positive way in which, from a Catholic point of view, Christians can relate to others. So I would see as if having quite a wide audience, but in the first instance, it's the Catholic community.
You're talking about the balance between the Christian vision of Christ as the one and only means of salvation and the need to open oneself to other truths found in other faiths. Now,
yes,
as you know, there are some who talk about this as trying to square the circle. It is a very sensitive, as you say, and difficult issue. What guidelines, if you like, what help are you giving people in trying to discern this balance?
Well, I think what the help we're giving is trying to explain how that balance is maintained and explored in the teaching of the Church. And what I would say is that we can talk about it as a difficulty, but actually, when it's thought through in depth, there's a great coherence to it. Let me put it this way. If you're giving instruction to someone who is going to become a Catholic, you do two things. You explain fully and clearly the teaching of the Catholic faith, but you would also look for signs of the movement of the Holy Spirit in the life of the person who wants to become a Catholic, and those promptings of the Holy Spirit that have led that person to come seeking to become a Catholic. Now, that's a different thing from dialogue, of course, but I think it exemplifies the fact that in our outreach, we are both proclaiming the truth which we believe, the absolute centrality of Jesus Christ, but also recognizing the presence of the Holy Spirit in the lives of people who are not Christians, and in which God, in his own mysterious way, is leading them towards the truth. And I think this is a balance one has to be aware of and explore whatever outreach one is doing, for example, even in evangelization, preaching the gospel, as well as preaching the message, you're seeking to touch on the promptings of the Holy Spirit in the lives of those people you're speaking to, which for us are a kind of preparatio evangelica, must always be a kind of a way of opening people up to the fullness of the truth. And part of that is recognizing that in other religions there are elements of truth and goodness which we must not only recognize and respect but affirm, and also where possible state that that we share, because that gives the possibility for people of different religions to, if you like, be united in the values. For example, things like family life, a belief in one God, a concern for the environment. These are all a concern for life. These are all things that have a religious underpinning and a degree of convergence in the nature of that religious underpinning. And it's important that that should be acknowledged and explored.
Now, in this document, you're actually encouraging Catholics to attend other prayer services or meditation sessions to really engage much more directly. I imagine this will come as a bit of a surprise to some people.
Well, it wouldn't do to people who have been keeping up with the documentation that's come out in recent years. But I think you're right, it will. I think it's very important that here also very clear distinctions are made, and a mention is made of the important principle, lex orandi, lex credendi, that we don't pray together. You will remember that was the principle of the Assisi meeting as convened by Pope John Paul II, that we cannot pray together because the context and the belief background of our prayer is different. On the other hand, it is entirely appropriate, when the occasion is right, to invite people of other religions to attend our worship and to accept invitations to attend other people's. But for it to be made clear that this is not a participation on either side, but an act of friendship and of mutual respect. We're not saying that this should happen, you know, all the time, but there are occasions when this is an appropriate initiative.
You also tackle the question of interreligious marriages, of which there are increasing numbers, of course, in Britain today. It's a difficult area, isn't it, often for the priest or whoever is advising the couple?
It is a difficult area because we're talking about cross-cultural marriages, and of course different religions have different expectations about interreligious marriage. In the Catholic Church, it's always been the case that permission, dispensation can be given for interreligious marriage. A dispensation from disparity of cult is required. And it's given ultimately because marriage is in the human order, and that is respected, but with the usual provisos that the Catholic must do all in his or her power to avoid anything that would endanger their faith, and also do all in their power within the unity of the marriage to ensure that the children are brought up as Catholics. But the document is under no illusions about the problems that can arise and the pressures that people may be put under. And one of the things that we're anxious to say is that there must be very good preparation in which there's real thought about what are going to be the issues in entering into a marriage with a person of another religion, so that they're well thought out in advance, and also encourage particular pastoral care for people in other marriages. But it is made clear, there's a warning in the document about the difficulties, because although on the one hand some interreligious marriages can be great examples of a domestic church situation living the experience of dialogue, on the other hand, there are risks, and it's not something that should be entered into without very, very serious thought.
You also talk about the whole question of multicultural Britain and the very sensitive issue of immigration, particularly
yes.
Sensitive, of course, ahead of this coming general election. And you talk about, you say no to prejudice and racism, but you also call for issues of anti-Christian prejudice and discrimination to be tackled urgently by the authorities, both in Britain and abroad.
Yeah.
How much do you see this question of anti-Christian prejudice or anti-Catholic prejudice in Britain today?
I think it's true to say that in Britain, the Catholic Church is much, much more accepted now than it used to be. I think there was a time when, certainly at the time of the re-establishment of the hierarchy, when many people saw the Catholic Church as alien, as foreign, and indeed as a political threat. I think that is much, much less now, but I think it is there. It is there within the culture of this country. I think it's probably diminished partly because of secularisation, and people are less attuned to the influence of religion in society generally. I would say from time to time, as different issues come up, an undercurrent of anti-Catholic sentiment can be discerned. But our main concern, I think, is that what we say in this document should be seen also in the context of our concern about persecution of Christians. And I think one of the things we would want to say is that we want to be open to other religions, but we would look to that to a degree of reciprocation of that in other countries. And we would invite, in being open, as this document is, and having a spirit of openness, we would look to the development of a spirit of openness in our inter-religious dialogue partners. And I would like to see that as something developing very significantly in the future, and an engagement with the rather tough issues to which that gives rise.
Finally then, just an example, if you can give us, from your long experience of working in this area, a couple of examples of real best practice or stories that really show how this can work to great effect.
Well, let me just give you one example. When I left Rome after my time at the Council for Christian Unity, I was parish priest of Spark Hill in Birmingham, and it was an area which had been predominantly Irish, but more recently the majority population were Pakistani, and my neighbours there were Muslims from Pakistan, and we exercised what's called in the document the dialogue of life. We were good neighbours, and when the son from the family across the road got married, we attended the meal after that. And also in the area, in Spark Brook, there was an Islamic centre, and every month there was a meeting convened by the imam there, which was attended also by myself and some Anglican clergy in the area, in which we talked about things of shared interest. I remember a very interesting discussion when Princess Diana was killed about the salvation and how we regard the salvation of people in other religions and so on. And I think that is an example of getting to know each other. And because I think, as I always thought in ecumenism as well, that one of the main problems is simply ignorance. A lot of people don't know, and when people don't know, they make things up. And I think there was a great opportunity for actually giving first-hand information to one another. So that's the sort of thing I'd like to see replicated in different places.
My thanks there to the retired Archbishop of Southwark, Kevin MacDonald, who chairs the Department for Dialogue and Unity of the Bishops' Conference of England and Wales.